Hey everyone, and welcome to Between the Creations. My name is Lauren Hook, and each week on the podcast, I and my guest discuss various aspects of theology, Christianity, and the Bible. I'm so glad you've decided to join us. Let's get started. Thanks for joining me this week. It's a huge help when you like, rate, and subscribe to Between the Creations wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also follow the podcast on Instagram or Facebook for news about upcoming episodes. You can find out more about the podcast, submit topics you'd like me to cover on an episode, or even ask me to speak at your event at laurienhook.com. Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of Between the Creations. It is so good to have you along for the ride this week. I am here with the Reverend Dr. Rachel Poyski, and the doctor is still kind of relatively new there in front of your name, so it still feels kind of nice to hear it and to say it. So congratulations again on that. That's awesome. Rachel has a doctorate of ministry from Fuller Theological Seminary, which is where I did my master's, so we have a little bit of that in common. We also work together. You know, there's that minor detail as well. So welcome. It's so good to have you on the podcast this week. Do you have anything else you want to add to introduce yourself to the audience so they can know you a little bit better?
Let's see. I mean, I think you about covered it. Mom, I have two kids and just been doing ministry for a really long time now. So yeah, that's about it.
That's awesome. Yeah. So the reason Rachel's on the podcast this week is because I guess, wow, it was more than a year ago because it was pre-COVID. So probably like a year and a half, maybe even 2 years ago. Gosh, I discovered that we had a book in common that we both really, really love. It's your favorite book. I think it's safe to say that. Yes. Okay. It's Rachel's favorite book. And it's definitely probably one of my top two books on just preaching in general. But it's also just a great book, even if you're not someone who's in the pulpit or teaching or anything. It's just a great book to have. And it's, the book is Telling the Truth, the Gospel as Tragedy, Comedy, and Fairy Tale. Yeah. And it's just, it's literally 100 pages long. So you can just read it almost in one sitting. It's super accessible, but man, it is packed. I reread it this morning just to, you know, go through it again. And it is packed full of good stuff. So I'm excited to kind of go through that with you today. First of all, let me just ask you, why is it your favorite book? Which I realize that's a really big question. I mean, I'm a huge reader. When people ask me that question, it's like, oh, how much time do you have? but why this book out of all the books you've read, which are legion, I'm sure, between all the degrees that you have, why this one?
You know, I think this one, I came across this book when I was in seminary, but also doing ministry and feeling like, I think everybody in seminary has this moment where they're thinking, what am I doing? What is the point? Does this degree have meaning? Does doing ministry have meaning? Does this have purpose?
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. And so for me, I read this book and it was like, this is what a pastor, a preacher is supposed to do. And so for me, it solidified what my purpose was in ministry in a lot of ways. It articulated it for me and helps me say, okay, I all the things I'm reading, I find inspiring in here and they speak to me. And that tells me I'm hopefully on the right career path. And so I think it just in a moment of doubt about what am I doing here, it answered a lot of questions for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's one of those books, again, it's 100 pages long. So it's really small, but you read it. And if you're a person like me who likes to mark and underline your books, I mean, it's like every single page, there's something, right?
Yeah, it's just like, there's a quote on that's what I say about it. There's a quote on every page, you know?
Yeah, there really is. And I've never read another book like it. And I mean, I've read a lot of books, but I've never read another book on teaching, preaching, the gospel, Christianity, or anything. Again, you don't have to be someone who preaches to appreciate this book, but I've never read another book like it. And so I would love to jump into it with you a little bit and kind of explore it. So maybe the best way to do it is to kind of do it like he does. Start at the beginning, kind of with the story that he tells about why we need to understand the gospel as tragedy, comedy, and then fairy tale, and kind of walk through all of those and maybe walk through some of our favorite parts of those three sections or those three chapters.
Sure. Yeah.
So yeah, let's kind of jump in. How would you set this book up if you were explaining it to someone who might want to read it?
So I mean, I love how the first part starts. You know, it starts with, I'm going to just open it up a little bit here.
By all means.
It starts with this in 1872 with Henry Ward Beecher, who was traveling and he was supposed to give a lecture. And he gets there and he's having kind of this moment of doubt. If you read his story, his biography, he was a lot of great things, a lecturer, abolitionist. I'm sure his sister, Harriet Beecher Stowe, who was a great abolitionist. And so there's a lot of great things about him. But he also at this moment was struggling, which he did a lot with infidelity. And so he's going to give this lecture. And in the midst of it, it's almost his struggle with what does he bring to this lecture? And the truth is, he brings all of it. Just as when we as teachers, as preachers, as pastors, when we get up to speak, we bring everything. It says, we bring the world inside of us to what we're doing. And then it says, well, what are you saying? What do you say when you bring all of this? You're good and you're bad, you're ugly and you're beautiful. And this book is saying you bring the truth and what the truth of the gospel is. And the truth of the gospel is that it is a tragedy, it is a comedy, and it ultimately is a fairy tale. And I love that because it's telling everything about what the gospel story is. And, the tragedy piece, I'll kind of say a couple of things about each and then we can go into them a little bit more. But
yeah, absolutely. That sounds great.
The tragedy piece is we feel like God is absent. That sometimes God is not present. And even Jesus on the cross said, my God, why have you forsaken me? And so the tragedy is our great need and our great darkness that we live in. And what this book is saying is if you don't tell that to the people, they can't hear anything else because you've not told their reality, right? And so I think
you've brushed all of their pain and their longing and their disappointment and how the world is to the side. And we have to acknowledge that in our teaching of the gospel.
And, as pastors, we sometimes don't want to do that because that's a dark, it's not fun. That's not the fun part. But if we don't meet people where their true pain is, we can't get to the other parts. And then the next part is it's comedy. The gospel is preposterous when you think about it. This baby comes and he's not a king as you know it. He's in a manger and all the lowly people seem to be rise to the top as the most important characters. And none of it makes sense. It's completely opposite of what you expect. And so in a lot of ways, it's funny. It's funny that the gospel came that way to us. And then, of course, lastly, it is a fairy tale and that fairy tale is interesting because if you know a fairy tale, there's so many things about it that include darkness, include comedy, and include beautiful things. And the fairy tale for us is what I get from this book is that the fairy tale is not over for us, right? That we know we live in the already, but not yet, where we're going to see more. So it's the final victory, in every fairy tale, somebody wins. So it's the victory part of the gospel. So that's kind of brief.
Yeah. That's a great setup. Thank you for that. And I think that especially with the fairy tale part, sometimes people balk at that concept. They're like, well, the gospel is true mm-hmm. and fairy tales are false. Ultimately, they're like fiction. And I think that C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien and George MacDonald, they did this so well in their writings. And basically what they did is they said, look, they're like, Christianity is the great myth that has come true. Like it's the great true fairy tale. It's the great true myth that all these other stories are really trying to in some ways imitate without even realizing it. Because what is better than this grand narrative that we've found ourselves swept up in that's actually true? In its preposterousness, it's even true in its darkness and all those things. So if you're kind of listening to this and maybe you're balking at this idea of Christianity as a fairy tale or the gospel as a fairy tale, we're not saying that in the sense that it's fiction. Correct. We're saying it in the sense that it is this preposterous story that just has so many twists and turns, both in, like, as you read the scriptures, but also as our lives continue as Christians, even today in the 21st century, there's just preposterous things that still happen, and outlandish things, and dark things, and sad things, and happy things, and all of those things that happen in fairy tales and myth that are actually true, that are actually playing into the grand narrative of Christianity. So I always like to kind of qualify that a little bit, because I've talked with so many people who balk at the idea of using the terms fairy tale and myth when we talk about Christianity, because in their minds, those things are only fiction. And Christianity, in many ways, is the great fairy tale that is true.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's a great way of setting that up.
Right. Yeah.
So one of my favorite things about how he writes this book is in the introduction, and he weaves it throughout. He asks the question, what is truth? Which is the great question that Pilate asks Jesus.
Right.
He says, what is truth? And you instantaneously, as you read this book, you begin to see how he's going to tell this story. And so there's, like, I don't even know, like, probably somewhere between 6 and 10 pages where the author tells the story of Pontius Pilate, eventually getting to the point of talking to Jesus. And he does it in almost like this, almost like a Jesus Christ superstar way, where it's like, it's not, he doesn't set it in biblical times. He doesn't set it in Judea. He doesn't set it in the times that the gospel was written. He almost makes it more modern. And it's almost like Pilate is like this he was a government official, but he's a modern government official, and he rides to work in a limousine, and he and his wife's marriage is on the rocks, and he's trying to give up smoking and all these things. And you read it and you're like, okay. And in the back of your mind, you're like, I know this isn't like how it actually went down, but it's somehow the way that you're telling the story is making it come alive. Yeah. And there's truth in how you're telling the story. So I love that. And part of me is like, man, I wish that we, as people who teach and preach and lead, but also just as Christians in the workplace, could tell the story better.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes the story for us gets stagnant and stale, which is unfortunate, but when you're in it all day long, sometimes it gets stagnant and stale. So what do you think about, like,
do
you have thoughts about that whole, like, narrative? Because I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I love that, because what he's really doing is, you know, he's helping us see ourselves in the story. And he does the same thing, if you remember, with Abraham and Sarah, you know, and he talks about how they planned this whole life together, and they bought the crib waiting for kids, and then the kids didn't come. And so this was in the comedy section where they talked about Abraham and Sarah, and where he talks about how, so they moved out to, you know, moved out the suburbs, all these things, and then talks about how things went wrong with Lot, and the baby never came, and then the baby came, and that was the great comedy, that God did something totally surprising. And what I love about both of those, with Pilate and with the Abraham and Sarah story, is it helps us, like you said, it brings the story back alive and reminds us that in a lot of ways, nothing has changed as we're in this human condition, that what Pontius Pilate felt and was wrestling with, and Abraham and Sarah, are the exact same things that we wrestle with as we try to figure out what is the truth of the gospel and how do we live that out, you know. And I think that was part of Pontius Pilate, right? He was like, what's going on here, and what's my place in history going to be? And he was dealing with all his demons and everything that was going on inside of him. And so both of those are really interesting, because I think it's amazing how he weaves it through like that. And and just with the comedy piece of it, with Abraham and Sarah, you know, he talks about how they laughed. They had laughed when they had Isaac, because he was so unexpected. And it, all through the Gospels, we are completely surprised with what Jesus is doing. It's things we never expect. And Jesus, the way he teaches, he uses, you know, a mustard seed. Who thinks that's an important thing? Or he tells the story about leaving the 99 sheep for one, which is completely comical, because
it's ludicrous, right? It's so,
like,
comical.
A shepherd would never do that. And in real life, right? They would not leave the 99 to go for the one. And so all through, their twists and turns where things actually are just so crazy, they don't make sense. But in the gospel, they do.
And I, one of the reasons I love this book is because he speaks, and we've talked about it a little bit right off at the beginning. He speaks to the reality that, that tragedy, comedy, and fairy tale are really how our lives get played out. And if from the pulpit, and if in our Sunday school classes, and if in our spiritual development, in our lives, and in our workplaces, and in our, you know, experiences with our friends and family and kids, if we are not speaking to the reality of the tragedy in our daily lives, of the reality of the comedy that just come, and you're like, all we can do is laugh at this. Like at this point, all we can do is laugh, or the fairy tale when something just really unexpected happens. And so if we're not acknowledging these realities in our churches, then we don't have a whole lot to say to the society at large that is experiencing these things on a daily basis. And if the church, if we as Christians just kind of like clam up and we're like, no, life is great. Like every, you know, every day with Jesus is sweeter than the day before. No, it isn't. Yeah. It is not. Sometimes tomorrow is harder than today was. And the next year is just crazy. Yeah. And I think I'm going to read a quote. I think you and I have different editions of this book. So I apologize for that, but it's in the tragedy section. And for me, it's on page 39. I have no idea if that is correct for you or not, but it's in the tragedy section, kind of at the beginning of the book, because first it's tragedy before it's anything else. And I love this. He's talking about where Jesus is on the cross. He says, my God, where have you forsaken me? And then he's talking more about that. And then he's offering the story, and part of the story, it says, if thou art our Father who art in heaven, be thou also our Father who art in hell, because hell is where the action is, where I am and the cross is. It is where the pitiless storm is. It is where men labor and are heavy laden under the burden of their own lives without you, where they cut themselves shaving and smoke three packs a day, though they know the Surgeon General's warning by heart.
Yeah.
And I just love that idea of, if you're going to be our Father in heaven, then you better be our Father when we're walking through hell right now. Because if you're not, then it really, it doesn't move past tragedy. If that's the reality. And I don't know if you have a quote or anything from that tragedy section.
This one.
Yeah, go for it.
This is probably one of my favorite pieces, where it talks about, it says, so if preachers or lecturers are to say anything that really matters to anyone, including themselves, they must say it not just to the public part of us that considers interesting thoughts about the gospel and how to preach it, but to the private inner part too, the part of us all where our dreams come from, both good dreams and our bad dreams. The inner parts where thoughts mean less than images, elucidation less than evocation, where our concern is less with how the gospel is to be preached than what the gospel is and what it means to us. They must address themselves to the fullness of who we are and the emptiness too. The emptiness where grace and peace belong, but mostly are not, because terrible as well as wonderful things have happened to us all. That last part, I love. Yeah. The emptiness where grace and peace belong, but mostly are not, because terrible as well as wonderful things have happened to us all. And I think that's what you're getting at too, is in the tragedy piece, what we have to do is acknowledge the hard things, the terrible things, because they've happened. They happened to Jesus. They happened to us. And if we are to speak anything about the goodness and the hope that comes, we have to acknowledge the darkness that preceded all that. Even if we think about, you know, in John, it says it was darkness, right? But the darkness could not overcome it. And, you know, anyway, I can go through and quote the whole chapter. But my point is that we have to acknowledge the darkness before the light. That's the gospel. And
yep.
The tragedy is we live in this sad and broken situation a lot of the time. But the comedy and the fairy tale are the beautiful part. But you don't appreciate the comedy or the fairy tale if you haven't understood and acknowledged and named the tragedy that is part of life.
Yeah.
So,
And I think that we as Christians are, especially if you grew up in the church and if you know all the right words and if you know all the right songs and if you know all the stories, it's so easy for us to skip ahead. So, and he uses the examples in the book, one of them being like when Jesus says, you know, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden. And there's a pause there. Like Jesus is acknowledging, like, that's the tragedy part. The tragedy is that we are all weary and heavy laden. And we need to sit in that reality before skipping on ahead to the, and I will give you rest. Yeah. Because there is this grand kind of breath and like the breath before the plunge, basically, that happens in that sentence where you have to, and, but we, especially if you grew up in the church, we know it. So we're quoting it and we don't realize that in the first part of that statement, Jesus is acknowledging the tragedy. He's acknowledging the reality and he's speaking to it. And unfortunately, there's so many preachers and teachers today just all over who refuse to speak to the tragedy because it's not as sexy, right? It's not as, you're not going to, you might eventually start drawing the crowds because they're going to be like, wait, this person is telling the truth. This person is, they're talking about the pain that I'm feeling on a daily basis. But we don't like to do that because it's not as fun as getting, as skipping ahead to the, and I will give you rest. And we, you know.
Yeah, you know, I have a funny story about that with a three-year-old. I was teaching Passover, and I decided for three-year-olds, I probably shouldn't talk about the blood on the door, you know. So I'm trying, which is kind of silly to try to teach Passover without that. But I skipped over it, and she stopped me, and she said, she raised her hand. She's like, Miss Rachel, and I was like, yeah. And she said, you forgot about the blood on the door. And
that was me as a three-year-old. That would have been me.
It was not Lauren. I'm not that old, but anyway, I was like, wow. And that was that three-year-old. It was a profound moment for me because I thought sometimes to get through, to talk about the deliverance, you know, you have to talk about the pain and the bloodshed. And so it reminded me that even with three-year-olds, there has to be an element where you talk about the hard darkness. You know, I maybe still would have figured out a different way to tell them, maybe told a different story. I don't know, but right. The point is, it reminded me, yeah, we have to tell the whole story that, and she caught me in it. She knew that I had not told the whole, I had not told the whole story. So that's what it's about, right? Is telling all of it, all of the pain, because you can't talk about deliverance without the pain that you're delivered from.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's move. I want to move us on to the comedy part because I want to get, make sure we hit all of them. So I'm going to read my favorite quote from the comedy part, which is a little bit long, but I think it's necessary to read the whole thing just so everyone can kind of hear it.
Yeah. Right.
So let me read this. This is from the comedy section. So we've had the tragedy. Now we're moving to the gospel as comedy. And it says this, it says, God is the comic shepherd who gets more of a kick out of the one lost sheep once he finds it again than out of the 90 and the 9 who had the good sense not to get lost in the first place. God is the eccentric host who, when the country club crowd all turn out to have other things more important to do than come live it up with him, goes out into the skid rows and soup kitchens and charity wards and brings home a freak show. The man with no legs who sells shoelaces on the corner. The old woman in the moth-eaten fur coat who makes her daily rounds of the garbage cans. The old wino with his pint in a brown paper bag. The pusher, the whore, the village idiot who stands at the blinker light waving his hand as the cars go by. They are seated at the table in the great hall. The candles are all lit and the champagne glasses filled. At a sign from the host, the musicians and their gallery strike up Amazing Grace. If you have to explain it, don't bother. And I love that quote because it captures so beautifully the comedy of the gospel, of God going out and picking up all of us, because none of us, quite honestly, are really the country club people. Like, if we're really honest with ourselves, we are the crazy people out there. We're the people who are addicted. We're the people who are in so just far in our struggles and in our pain and so far down that we don't even realize it. And he picks us up and he's like, hey, come on to the party. And part of it is just that we, especially if you grew up in the church, we've become so used to it that we forget how audacious it is.
Yeah.
Like just again, the comedy of the gospel.
Yeah. It almost plays like a comic strip, right? If you think about it, it's someone's made a big table and they're waiting for someone fancy to show up and no one fancy shows up and they're like, okay, well, forget this. I'm going to go out and find somebody to eat my food. I mean, that's how preposterous it is, but that is the gospel, right? And I know I love my favorite quote in here. It's talking about how the humor and that God chose the Jewish people to be his chosen people, because it says he chose the Jews, you know, his holy chosen people. He chose the Jews who, as somebody has said, are just like everybody else, only more so, more than religious in anybody when they're religious, and when they were secular, being secular as if they invented it. And the comedy of the covenant, God saying, I will be your God and you shall be my people, to a people who before the words had stopped ringing in their ears were dancing around the golden calf and carrying on. And it's just like, yeah, that's what they, God chose these, this imperfect people to be his people, and they messed up all the time. And I mean, look at everybody who God used. I mean, it's kind of crazy, right? And David had made so many mistakes, and yet God used him. You know, the fact that he called this short little Zacchaeus down off of his tree, out of his tree, and, you know, convinced him to follow him. It, all through the Gospels, it's just funny who God chooses. It's never the person you expect. I mean, think about Peter. Peter is like, for me, one of the most comedic characters, you know, all the way through. He's just like messing up, you know, all the time. And then God still at the very end is telling him, feed my sheep. And he uses him to build his church. So that is the comedy. It's, it, you know, what we don't expect, what we're not looking for. And that's what we end up getting. So that's the part I just love about it, is that it really is a comedy. When you, like you said, we've become so used to it. But if you step back a few feet, you're like, this is really silly how all this plays out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and Paul picks up on this, right? When he's like, we preach Christ crucified, which is folly. Like it's foolishness to those that don't understand or who refuse to understand, or, you know, it does not make sense. I said this in a lecture that I gave a few weeks ago. I looked at the audience and I was like, you realize that you worship someone who was murdered, right? Like let's remember that for a second. Like take a minute. Let's remember that, because that is audacious. Like granted, he rose from the dead, but before he rose from the dead, he was murdered. And so like just the craziness, the comic aspect of that, just the audacity of the story, I think sometimes we forget or we become comfortable mm-hmm. with. And sometimes we need to be shocked back into the narrative that we found ourselves in. And I think that much like this book is doing, right, hopefully we're hearing good messages, be they in the pulpit or on a podcast or on something. Hopefully we're learning and we're positioning ourselves under good teachers who help us see the whole story and help it come alive. Maybe we need to hear a version of the Bible where Pilate is riding around in his limo trying to quit smoking. He's having problems with his wife, and where Abraham and Sarah have loaded up the station wagon and they're heading out to Canaan, like contextualizing it a little bit mm-hmm. and making it a little bit more close to home, because that's another thing we do with the scriptures. And with we're like, that happened over there and I'm over here. And so I'm able to create some distance between what it means for me in my life now. And if we understand the story as tragedy, comedy, and fairy tale, then it actually has implications for us now, because our lives are full of all those three elements, yeah. right? And it's not some like far off thing that happened 2000 years ago, which, you know, we become less sensitive to it, I think.
You know, and I love just what it talks about in here. You know, Jesus preached so much, we know, about caring for the poor and all that. And the funny part is he was poor himself. So it, you know, it's like this nomad is walking around telling people care for the poor. And then he's healing people, and they think, you know, people are calling him, you know, the Messiah. It just, it's crazy. It's, and you know, and you'd like to think, oh, well, if I was in that time, if I was in that part of history, I would know who he was. But you kind of have to put yourself in everyone else's shoes that were there and think, it really didn't make sense if you are looking at it from the outside, you know?
Yeah. And even, I mean, he taught in parables, and we're told even multiple times that his closest friends and followers were like, what does that mean? Can you explain that to us? And I mean, the parables that man told were insane. Yeah. Like we've become so comfortable with them. I mean, there's pictures of God, like God is depicted as like this belligerent neighbor or judge who like you have to pound on the door till, you know, you're gonna wake up God's kids, and God finally flips the lights on and comes downstairs and is like, what do you want? Like, that's not a picture of God that we want to deal with or that we want to talk about very often, but that's what Jesus talked about. And he talked about how God is like this woman who lost a coin or who lost and just searches the house until she finds it. And there's a lot of things about that that we don't want to talk about really. But, you know, it's like, what do we do with these pictures that Jesus is giving us of God? And there is a comic element in some of it that it's so, again, I keep using the word audacious, but it's so contrary to how we think things should be. You know, it's not well put together and prim and proper, right? And, you know, black tie, and, you know, it's not that. It's a whole lot more like, you know, sandals and ratty jeans and a torn white t-shirt and just being out there. But we like to clean it up, right? We like to make it a little bit more presentable. And the gospel is like, no, you can't do that to me.
No, it's not a grand theater performance. It's more like improv, you know what I mean? And yeah, I think that when we step back and look at it, it's not anything we would have expected. And that's kind of the turn of it that makes it so amazing. So,
yeah. And it's, and I think understanding it that way makes it so much more applicable and meaningful to our daily lives. I think it was Voltaire who said that, he said, God is a comedian playing to an audience too afraid to laugh. And I think that God is wanting us to laugh sometimes. I think that God is wanting us to sit back and go, could this possibly really be true? And if it is, it's the greatest thing I've ever heard. And all I can do is burst out in laughter about it.
Yeah.
Like you said, like what Sarah does, like she laughs at the audacity of what God has said that God will do. And then it happens. And she's just like, how is this my life? Like, this is insane. And I think that Voltaire is obviously getting at something different in his quote there. But the idea of God being a comedian, playing to an audience too afraid to laugh, I think God is inviting us into the laughter of just the craziness of the kingdom, where wild things happen that we could not have orchestrated on our own.
Yeah.
But sometimes we're too afraid to laugh because, especially if you were raised in church, we don't really laugh at the things of God, right? Like we don't, again, it's, we're a little bit more controlled. We're a little bit more simmered down. And I mean, when was the last time you just burst out laughing at something that God had done or something God told you to do? And you're like, that's wild.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably one reason why I like working with kids, because you can still bring out some of that humor that you see in the gospel, and you know, they appreciate it if no one else does. But I mean, I love, you know, there's one part where Jesus totally puts the Pharisees in their place. He just like turns around and gives it to them, you know, and we don't really talk about that very much. Or I love when, you know, they're at the wedding and he performs his first miracle and his mother's nagging him to do something. That's hilarious to me that, you know, that she knew what he needed to be doing. And so, yeah, I think you're right. I think sometimes we miss some of the comedic nuances of the Bible because we need to be serious when we read the Bible. And in reality, the whole thing is turned upside down. So, I mean, I can't help but, you know, I think God has a sense of humor. He gave it, we're creating his image, and we have a sense of humor. So sometimes, some of us do. And,
right.
Not everybody, but some of us do. Sometimes I do. But I think that, you know, that's part of it. And so living into some of that, that's what I love about this, probably because of my, you know, children's ministry kind of stuff. I love thinking about the gospel as comedy because it just helps me see it in a different light and see that, yeah, just like him telling the story of, you know, a camel going through a needle's eye. That's hilarious, right? Try to imagine that. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Okay. So we've talked about the gospel as tragedy. We've talked about it as comedy. Let's talk about it as fairy tale. What's your favorite aspect of this element of the gospel? We talked a little bit about it. You know, it's the great fairy tale that's true and all that stuff. But I mean, you work primarily with kids. And so is there that element of kind of just getting them involved in the deeper story and stuff that you see? Or what's your favorite aspect of the gospel as fairy tale?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a reason why kids love fairy tales. There's a reason why I still love fairy tales. there's something beautiful and mysterious about them, and there's an unfolding to them. You know, we, at the beginning, we don't know how the story is going to end. And then we watch it unfold the pieces through the darkness, through the villain, through the funny parts. And then we get to the end. And I want to read this one quote where it says, in each case, it's talking about all the different fairy tales we love, like Cinderella, you know, all that, Beauty and the Beast. And it says, in each case, a strange world opens up when it chooses to open up. And when they enter it, things happen in the inner world of who they are, and the outer world of where they ordinarily live their lives couldn't possibly happen. And so it's kind of that idea of fairy tale is we're part of the gospel unfolding even now. And we're living in it, and we're getting to watch it unfold. And it's kind of, when I read the gospel's fairy tale, I think about in 1 Corinthians 13, when it says, we look in a mirror dimly, but then we shall see face to face. And it's kind of that promise, right? That we are seeing things of God, we're seeing things of the gospel from this side of heaven, but we know that there is more to the story to come, that we as believers will see the entire true fairy tale of the gospel unfold. And so for me, this is about some anticipation of what's to come. It's like I'm seeing a little bit through people of the kingdom of the gospel and what God's doing in the world, but I'm not able to see it all yet because I'm part of it. So we're really joining God in this fairy tale story. And we have a little more idea of where it ends, right? We know that we know that there's some things that are promised in the end to us. So it's not like we're totally unsure about the ending, but we are definitely part of the ongoing story and how it's leading us from darkness and light to final victory.
Yeah, I think it was C.S. Lewis who, in a letter he wrote to maybe his godson or someone to a child, he wrote, you know, someday maybe you'll be old enough to start reading fairy tales again. And it is like that weird thing. We love them as children, and then we get a little older and we're like, that's for children. That's for babies or infants or you know, whatever. That's for elementary age kids. And then something happens in us, I think, as we begin to see maybe more of the tragedy of the world, and we're like, wait a second, I need those stories again, or that type of story. Maybe, you know, you're not going to go watch Cinderella over and over again as an adult, but you need that kind of hope or that story that actually looks a little bit like your life does, in that it is unexpected twists and turns. There's nice people and mean people. There's heroes and villains. There's something that you're striving for. Again, we need these types of narratives because this is what our life actually is. Yeah. And I think that fairy tales and good stories even help us make sense of the world, help us make sense of our inner worlds, our outer worlds. And if we really begin to understand the gospel and the story that God is weaving, even now in the church today and with us as believers today, we can really begin to see it as fairy tale, as the great true fairy tale, as the great true myth, where unexpected things happen. There's evil, there's good, and not so much that there's this like dualistic thing where like we're actually waiting to see how is it going to end. I don't know. We know how it ends, but we need a true story that can speak to our experience. Yeah. And that is what the gospel does. It speaks to our actual reality and experience because it is true and it is real. Yeah. And that, I think that is the beauty of what this book is trying to do. It's trying to say, look, the gospel is the only story that can actually speak to every aspect of things that you experience in your human life.
Yeah.
All of the other stories, Cinderella eventually is going to fall flat. Beauty and the Beast is, you know, Sword in the Stone is going to fall flat. All of these, even Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, for all you Christians out there who just think it's the greatest. It's great. It's not the greatest. I'm telling you that right now. It's still good. Lord of the Rings is better, but whatever. Even that falls flat eventually, right? Because something about it resonates in us, but we're like, but I'm not living in those times. Yeah. But once we understand how the gospel gets pulled forward into our 21st century lives right now, it's the only story that can speak to every aspect of the human life that you're going to encounter.
Yeah.
And I think that is why, especially if you're a preacher or a teacher, even if you teach, you know, I don't care if you're teaching the oldest group of Sunday school people or the babies or the teenagers, I don't care. we have to become better storytellers. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I just thought about a lot recently. We have to become better storytellers, I think, both in the pulpit, in the Sunday school room, in around the water cooler, at our cubicles. Yes. Like, it doesn't matter if you're a, quote, professional Christian or not. Like, we have to become better storytellers.
Yeah.
I think that's the only way, like, forward.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that as Christians, our main job is to convey to people the tragedy, the comedy, and the fairy tale of the gospel. And because then you can see yourself in all of those things, you know, and you're right. We have to tell the story well. And, you know, for me, I think that's whenever I'm teaching or preaching, I feel the weight of that, that it's so important that I convey the truth of the gospel and the truth of the gospel that in a way that touches where people are. That's a really important part. There's another quote in here that I love. It says, but the whole point of the fairy tale of the gospel is, of course, that he is king in spite of everything. And when you think about a fairy tale, a lot of times it always comes back to that, right? The kingdom is restored. The king is back on his throne. And that is the gospel, that Jesus will be on his throne, that evil will be, you know, destroyed. And so I love that, that it he is still the king in spite of everything. And so how do we do that? How do we meet somebody in their tragedy and also speak to them about the fairy tale? Because we're in the tragedy, but we're also in the fairy tale and we're also in the comedy. And part of our job, I think, as Christians is to name and to help other people identify all of that in their lives.
That's a good word.
That they can see, okay, I'm in darkness and that's okay. And then when Christ comes to me, it's crazy how he loves me despite my darkness, right? How he would sit out with a woman at the well who's had so many husbands and no one would talk to. And they were, you know, lunch partners there, you know, sat together. He sits with me in that way, which is crazy. And then also he is victorious and he's king. And so even in my darkness and even in the why is he even messing with me? I can realize he's also king of the world and ultimately is my rescuer. So I think you're right. As a Christian, we have to tell all of that. And that's what this book is about. It's like, and wherever you are in as a Christian, even if you bring, like I said, it's that quote about where you bring your world with you. And I think sometimes as believers, we want to put on the happy face and leave our world behind, when really we have to bring our world with us because that's our authentic voice, where we bear testimony to the tragedy in our life, the comedy in our life, and the promise of the fairy tale. So.
Yes. Amen to everything you just said. I think that's a great place to wrap up. I mean, I could listen, basically just go back and re-listen the past like 3 minutes over and over again, everyone, because Rachel just summed up the whole book and really kind of part of our mission as Christians in about 3 minutes, which is hard to do. So I think you did that really well. So thank you.
It's the book. It's the great inspiration of the book.
It's a great book. I'll put the book in the show notes for y'all. So if you're interested, you can have a link to Amazon to grab that so you can have it. Thanks so much, Rachel, for being on the podcast.
Yeah,
it was great to have you. And thanks so much for your wisdom. And guys, you guys know the routine by now. Please, if you haven't already, if maybe you're a new listener, if you would subscribe to the podcast and leave a review and rate it, that is literally the best thing you can do to help us get the word out. So until next week, I hope you guys have a great rest of your week. And we will see you, or not see you, but, you know, be back in your earbuds or in your car speakers or wherever next week.